Thanks to DigitalOcean for sponsoring Does Not Compute. DigitalOcean is the easiest cloud platform to run and scale your applications. They offer effortless administration tools, robust compute, storage and networking services, one-click app installs, and even monitoring services. On top of all of that, they offer a flat, predictable, and affordable pricing structure so that you know exactly what your businesses pay per month for their blazing fast infrastructure. DigitalOcean provides a truly robust all-in-one cloud platform to help developers, including me, and their team save time while running and scaling applications. You can get started with DigitalOcean today by signing up at do.co/doesnot, and you'll receive a free $100 credit towards hosting your applications. Again, that's do.co/doesnot to receive $100 of credit towards a flexible and scalable hosting solution for your next application. When I'm trying to get into the groove, when I'm trying, like I have a problem that I need to solve and I'm stuck on it, that's the feeling I get when I'm trying to get going. It's like, yep.
You feel like a Muppet?
Yeah, I feel like a Muppet most of the times when I'm working with SQL, so.
Sounds much better here.
Yeah, something like that. A little bit,
That's my half Kermit, half Yoda impression.
Kerta the frog.
Yeah.
Feeling green, I am.
Green. Speaking of green, you're using Vue, which has a green logo.
That's quite the transition. I like that.
I like that. Yeah, yeah. So I've been talking your ear off about like telling you about Nuxt forever now, I feel like.
Yeah, and I've kind of been following along, playing with it, but never really going fully into actually making something that was going to make it into production. I started working on some RHR stuff in just plain Vue and Vuex, and didn't get too far with it. Like it was really nice and I felt super productive and enjoyed doing it. But that was just kind of like one piece of an application. I didn't actually try to really make a new application from scratch. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And you actually, I think you mentioned to me that you had tried using the new version of Vue CLI recently, right? Vue CLI 3?
Yeah, I heard it came out, and it actually just coincided right with when I was starting this new project. And I fired it up and went through the options and didn't even really know what some of the options were. And it just didn't feel like it was a lot. There was a lot of knowledge required to even know like what the skeleton projects that it generated looked like, you know?
Yeah, it's quite a bit of stuff.
And so I thought that was going to be a solution. It's cool. It's Vue CLI 3 is very cool. It's got this great web-based plugin management that kind of ships with it, which is pretty neat, but I have no need for right now. I don't know.
Yeah, that's always been interesting to me because it sounds cool, like having a UI to configure your tasks in your plugins that you're using. It seems cool. I mean, like dashboards have been kind of a trendy thing for Webpack. Like there's all these different Webpack dashboards that are coming out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you haven't seen any of those. So basically, you can add like Webpack. I don't remember the name of any of them off the top of my head, but you can add them as a dependency to your project. And you run a command, and it basically shows you different things like here's your bundle size, here's how long it took to compile. You know, just different things that you might want to know about your bundle. And I mean, obviously, like the bundle explorers are nice because you can see how much space your dependencies are taking up. And that's like a really, you know, in performance, in tuning for performance, like you always want the easiest wins, like the least amount of work for the biggest amount of payoff is what you want to go after. And so if you're attacking your bundle size, that's a really good way to see what's going on in there, because we can get carried away by adding bundles too often, I think. But yeah, so there's been all these kind of like CLI dashboards. And I guess they'd be similar to, I think you showed me Observer CLI was something that you showed me a few weeks ago. I guess it's similar to that. It's just kind of like a dashboard in the terminal. But I think like Vue's CLI UI, I can't remember what it's called, the web UI, as you said, is like the logical extension of that. It's like the next step of that.
Yeah, it seemed very, very powerful. And it's plugins. It's not necessarily plugins for Vue, your project. I think it's plugins just for Vue CLI itself.
Sure.
I don't know. I didn't get too much into it, but it was a lot going on. And so I asked in our Discord, I was like, hey, like, this is kind of confusing. And Mikhail was like, oh, just use Nuxt.
Sure.
Like, I could either start with Vue CLI and have this gigantic pre-generated project with all stuff that I don't know what is going on, how it's configured, Webpack and all this stuff. Or I can just make a new package.json, add Nuxt to it, and just like go. and just start making folders and files, right?
Yeah.
And not only is that way more appealing, but they end up having the structure that you need to generate to make a full-fledged application anyways. You know, I'm not even using SSR. I'm not using any of the fancy universal application features or Nuxt. I'm literally just doing a single-page application, like the most boring thing you can imagine.
Yeah.
That you can use Nuxt for. But it's still great to just have a little bit of direction, you know?
Yeah, that's what I liked about it initially, I think, was that to me, it feels kind of like the Rails way in a sense. So if you look at Vue CLI, there are some conventions there. It's just, there's not very much. So Vue CLI really just kind of gets the boilerplate out of the way, I think. So it gets you set up with Webpack and all the dependencies that you need, and it gets you set up with, you know, compiling and all that stuff. But apart from that, it doesn't really help you, or doesn't really say, here's how you should structure things. And really, that's what I struggle with the most. Like the dependencies, that's one thing, because it's not like the dependencies are a different concern than actually designing your application. And designing a spa application is a whole thing, right? And so in my mind, going the Nuxt route, it removes a certain set of questions that you need to answer. And once those questions are removed, you're actually able to just get in and work on the implementation right away. And that's kind of what Rails felt like to me when I first started using it, was it just answered a bunch of questions. So they were just a solved problem. You do things this way. And because you're doing things that way, you're able to be productive pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that's a totally fair comparison. And in fact, a lot of stuff I found in Nuxt worked, even though it wasn't documented. Like, it just worked the way I expected it to. Like, for example, I'm using Vue X for state management. And in Vue X, you can split up your state into modules, which are individual files in your store directory. And I was like, oh, what happens if I put another folder in my store directory? Like, I want to nest my modules deeper. Well, guess what? It just handles that. It knows to look for them,
right?
And it puts them in the right hierarchy in the store. And it just works. I was like, oh, that's cool. And stuff like that. So I struggled a little bit with... So what I'm working on is, let me back up here. What I'm working on is rewriting from scratch, more or less, the RHR console, we call it, the single page application right now where you spend 95% of your time in Remote Ham Radio, which is the main screen that shows all the different stations you can connect to and all the controls for all the equipment, and also has all the audio pieces built in, the WebRTC and WebSockets, and all that stuff is all on one page. And currently it is a... started off as a proof of concept jQuery based thing, and just grew from there. And originally it was jQuery UI.
Mm-mm.
And then at some point I abandoned that early on and went with Bootstrap, which was a very good choice. But now it's getting to the point where it's hard to extend. It's hard to make changes on the back end that then I have to change to reflect on the front end. It's just not maintainable. It's spaghetti code. It's a lot of updating UI state. It's a lot of updating local state.
Sure.
It's a lot of just managing a lot of different things. And also it's extremely inefficient in the sense that, like, I don't get the benefits of Vue's rendering, the ability to render only what you're seeing, right?
Yeah.
With the jQuery thing, it's literally like 25 tabs and they're all rendering, but they're just in the background, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So... It's not intelligent about what UI elements are being updated, basically. So it can use a lot of RAM, and it's slow to navigate around. I think every tab has a new instance of Google Maps on it. Like,
okay, yeah.
So I'm good.
Yeah,
right?
That would be a lot.
Yeah. So Vue, and originally I started doing this in React and didn't get very far on that. There's been a lot of cold starts here with this project, but basically the idea is to change as little as possible and just get a drop-in replacement for the single page app. And
yeah, that I think that's a good plan of attack, because that's how I've always been successful in dropping stuff in like that, like shipping Elixir, for example, or build like splitting the client and the API out. Like, we didn't try to do anything new or fancy. We just tried to make it work as is. And that helps a lot. It's hard to do that because you see all the inefficiencies and things like that.
Yeah, that's called the second system effect. Have you heard of that?
I have not.
Also known as a second system syndrome, is a tendency of small, elegant, and successful systems to be succeeded by over-engineered, bloated systems due to inflated expectations and overconfidence.
Oh, okay.
And like, I'm so guilty of this, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
You design something that works, and then you see all the cracks and the flaws, and you're like, oh, I could do this better. And it becomes this pile of abstractions that just goes nowhere. And
right.
So by the same token, again, I've tried a couple times to restart this project, and I was like, oh, this the backend needs changing to fit this new UI. And oh, this messaging in the middle has to manage all the state, and like it was three big chunks I was trying to change all at once. And it's just too much, man. You just don't make enough progress in any of them, you know?
Yeah, it is a lot. And I think kind of when you start going into that mindset where you're trying to make progress and change all that stuff, some of that second syndrome stuff creeps in where you're going beyond the scope of what you're currently working on was, and then you're actually adding additions, which that just balloons everything, right?
Yeah, definitely. Even if it's, yeah, you're always trying to design for change, and you already know what stuff you're going to be working on. It's like, oh, what if I just add this? And man, it's just a spiral you don't want to get into. So
yeah,
I'm pretty happy with my choice here, and it's a compromise, right? It's not the ideal solution for my front end. You know, I would like it to be a lot cleaner. I would like it to have this nice clean back end to interface with, but you know what? It's just fine for now. You know?
One thing at a time.
Yeah, it's still going to be better. And honestly, this is the thing that makes most sense to work on, because this is a thing that literally the customers use. I mean, this is our product, right?
Mm-hmm.
Changing the back end stuff is nice, but it might not have immediately apparent advantages to the end user. So yeah.
Yeah. To me, like, this sounds like a huge win. I mean, you're talking about, so you're talking before about how the current dashboard, like you said just now, this is the product. This is what people use. And so previously, or what the current situation is it's on jQuery, which isn't necessarily bad. It just sounds like it's hard for you to maintain, which costs you time. And you said it's not very performant, which possibly costs your customers time. And it sounds like just switching it over to Vue, you benefit from the reactive kind of style of working, which saves you a lot of time. And you get some, I think you said before, Vue doesn't necessarily render everything. And I think you're talking about VIF, right? So if you're using VIF and the expression inside of VIF is false, it just doesn't even render that DOM node.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like without actually having additions and fixing some of the stuff that you eventually want to fix, this is a pretty massive, successful project once you ship it.
Yeah, I sure hope so. That's the idea. And yeah, nothing to say anything bad about jQuery. Like, I, you know, jQuery was awesome for its time. You know, it got a lot of work done in that. And it, in fact, it's funny, as I went to work on individual pieces of the old console, what I would actually do was actually rewrite these little panels. So the consoles kind of divide into a bunch of, they're actually bootstrap panels, but they're kind of like sections that kind of manage themselves.
Okay.
And I would rewrite those individual panels in as little React components.
Okay.
And then I would just manually just put an empty div on the page and then just tell React, hey, render the component here. And that actually worked really, really well, because then I could get state in and out of them really easy from my main blob application. But the component itself could, you know, benefit from those reactive, you know, coding styles. So that was nice. But that was only a few pieces here and there. So it'd be nice to have it all under that roof.
So what about Vuex? I don't remember. I think you were doing some React stuff, and I think you're talking about using Redux and Saga and some other stuff that I'm vaguely familiar with. I've used Redux before on a project with Airbnb that I did a couple of years ago, but that's about as far as my knowledge about it goes, is just a single project that I worked on. So I don't know anything about Sagas or any of the fancy tooling for Redux. And I remember you just kind of mentioning how complicated things can get. So yeah, so I'm wondering about your choice to use Vuex, what you think of it, I guess, not necessarily comparing, contrasting to Redux, but like, what's your gut feeling? Like, how are things feeling so far?
So yeah, in the React world, you've got the concept of a flux data store, which is not specifically an implementation. It's just the kind of pattern. And if you're familiar with gen servers or any kind of action or actor pattern, like, it's basically that. It's just taking a message and mutate a state, you know, immutably,
mm-hmm.
you know, one step at a time. That's really all there is to it. And Redux takes that to make some more assumptions, assumes, okay, you're only going to have exactly one store for your entire application. Whereas Flux, you might have like maybe each component has its own little store that it manages and has its own mutations and stuff.
Okay.
With Redux, it says, Like, no, there's just one store that's the root, and everything is just derived from that. So that's pretty much the biggest difference. And then Redux has some other conventions for what actions and mutations look like in terms of the payload for the JSON object. But it's very similar to Vuex in that sense. Now, Vuex is interesting because Vue has the responsive, I don't know the right word, the responsive objects, where when you update any kind of state anywhere, it just magically kind of observes and propagates throughout the whole thing.
Observable.
Yeah, observable, yes. And that's weird because on its face, it kind of conflicts with the whole functional immutable way that you expect a data store to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the way I think about it in my head is Vuex really, it has guarantees that you can only mutate. So for example, what happens is when you're in development mode and you, for example, you have a piece of state that you've pulled out of your store and you try to mutate it, if you do that by accident, you know, outside of a mutation, you just try to like say, you know, this dot that equals something else, it will actually throw a warning or an error at you in the JavaScript console. Be like, hey, like that's not allowed. Don't do that.
Yep.
Now it'll do it, but it'll say like, hey, don't do that. Right.
Right. Right.
So functionally, the reactive part of it still works. It's just enforcing you not to do that, saying, okay, only within the safe haven of a mutation can you actually mutate the store.
Right.
But so that's cool that it has those guarantees. So you always know exactly where things are happening. You get the advantages of the Vuex development tool, so you can see the whole history. But you still get all the benefits of this reactive, kind of loosey-goosey JavaScript way of updating state, as opposed to having like a hard CS-based, you know, immutable kind of mentality. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. That was one of the things I thought was interesting when I was going over to Redux, where they're using the immutable library specifically. And I was like, dang, they're pretty gung-ho about never changing this ever. Like, you know, not having changes propagate through, which I get it. It makes sense. I don't know. To me, it just seems like Vuex gets me where I need to go faster, and it's not more complicated than it needs to be, and it's not any less complicated than it needs to be, I guess. So I like the idea where you're saying like, hey, if you mutate the data outside of your store, outside of a mutation, it's going to say, hey, you probably shouldn't do this, but it doesn't break. It just doesn't fall apart. It doesn't fall down. It's kind of the same way where if you're in a component, and inside of the component, you mutate a prop that comes in, it'll say the same thing. It'll say, hey, you probably should have mutated a prop.
Oh, yeah. You're supposed to emit an event instead, right?
Yeah, you're supposed to emit an event, and you're supposed to, I mean, I've seen other people do things like when you send, for example, an object as a prop into something, you kind of make a deep clone of it using Lodash or something like that if you really need to change data. But yeah, it probably should be an event. So they don't, I like that things don't just break, and instead they kind of say, hey, here's a best practice. Maybe you should consider doing this. And a lot of them, I think a couple of actually, like the messages link to docs. If I'm remembering correctly anyway, they might link to the Vue docs site. So I kind of like that it feels like kind of like training wheels in a sense, where, like I said, the bike just like, it doesn't just stop working, like the pedals don't stop. It just says, hey, you should probably do this instead.
Yeah, definitely. And you have to turn that off in production because it's actually a big performance hit, it turns out. So I'm still kind of struggling a little bit with the way to structure my store. The way I'm doing things right now is I'm relying very, very heavily on dynamic module registration, which is kind of this feature that only gets like one or two paragraphs in the docs.
Okay.
And so normally for a store, you just define your modules up front and they have names and they manage, each module manages basically its own state and its own mutations, its own getters, its own actions, right?
Right.
It doesn't really have the context of what modules might be next to it or above it, or, you know, it knows what modules are below it. Well, I guess not necessarily. Anyway, for Remote Ham Radio, what I wanted to do was make, so when you connect to the console, you get, say, 25 unique stations, and each station has the same structure, right? It has a list of components, it has a name, it has all this information about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, well, that sounds like a module, but I need to be able to kind of create those on the fly, and that's where this dynamic module registration comes in.
Oh, okay.
And so instead of having to keep track of you know, passed around mutations with store IDs and, with site IDs and stuff. I can just pass it directly to the module itself, and it kind of just manages itself. And then within each station, there are also components. So for every piece of hardware that's at the remote station, that's also a module. And I have different modules for, you know, I've got an amplifier module, antenna module, a radio module. And those are all instantiated when you initially connect to the station, and it creates all those. So I got this huge kind of tree of nested modules.
Yeah, okay. So I think I'm trying to, because I haven't actually used the module registration, like dynamic Vuex modules myself. In fact, today was the first day I've written JavaScript in maybe 2.5 weeks. So I'm trying hard here to think. But so you mentioned how you have, when things boot up, you have a large collection of things and the data structures are largely the same. You just want to be able to act on them independently. Or I guess that's what you're saying, like the point of the dynamic modules is that you don't have to have like one module that acts on these things, and that way you wouldn't have to like pass around IDs all over the place. It would just be a self-contained store object for each site that comes in.
Yeah, it's kind of like having an instance of a class, basically, right?
I gotcha.
Except the state for the class just happens to be in a Vuex store as opposed to, you know, in the class itself.
So they're like little module factories.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it. Sure.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, so I think you sent me a screenshot of the dev tools, and I was like, wow, that's a lot of state you got there. It's quite so much stuff.
Yeah, I haven't quite figured out the right balance between that and using like where I should put my getters. Like, should I extract them into their own files that just kind of like are helper functions, or should I actually put getters in the modules? Because the getters can be hard to get at, because now your modules have dynamic names, right? You have to register it at a certain path. So you have to know ahead of time what that path is going to be to get at that getter, right?
Right, yeah.
And so I was running into issues with that, where I was using map getters, and you have to pass it, and you have to tell it where your getter is, but I don't know where my getter is because it's dynamic. So I got to find some kind of happy medium here where I can still have these modules, you know, have the modularity, but also make it dynamic enough that I can basically iterate over them, just like from a higher level. Mm-hmm. So I'm still trying to kind of walk that line and figure it out. Might be as simple as just making some special JavaScript class that just knows about it and handles it. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, it could be. I wish I could offer any more advice, I guess. Like, I haven't run into that situation. So
yeah, it's a, I don't know, it feels natural for me, but I think it might be a pretty unique situation for the way Vuex is designed to work.
Yeah. But I mean, it sounds like the progress that you're making is pretty unbelievable, because I kind of follow along the Discord whenever you're talking to Paul or Mikhail about it. And I'm thinking to myself, man, he's like a pro. He's
no, you don't see all the stumbling and the cursing and the reading of docs.
Sure.
It happens behind the scenes, of course, but
yeah.
No, I'm really, really happy with the progress so far. It's cool to see it come together one little screenshot at a time.
Yeah, no, it is, because you send those to me and every time it looks nice, you know, like what you're working on looks nice. And I think it's coming along quickly, which was, a big selling point of Nux, was that you're able to just get into the weeds quickly and not have to worry about the boilerplate stuff.
Yeah. Another thing. So we mentioned about not redesigning the whole application at once. I'm also not redesigning the design all at once. I am using a new CSS framework. I'm using Tailwind CSS, which is designed by Adam Wathen and others. Mm-hmm. And Tailwind is really, really cool. I've been hearing a lot about it and know some people have been using it. Just seemed, and when Bootstrap 4 came out, Bootstrap 4 is the current one, right?
Yeah, that's the current one.
Yeah, so when Bootstrap 4 and even 3 had the concept of utility classes, and Bootstrap 4 went really, really heavy into utility classes, and I saw the utility of them, you know, no pun intended, I just sprinkling them throughout everywhere and having view components where you feel like you can just kind of sprinkle in these little utility CSS classes here and there and not feel like you're polluting some giant other view, you know, some other front end component. I think it's really, really powerful, and it's gotten me really far so far. The utility classes that come with it. So the way Tailwind works is it's pretty cool, actually. It generates a JavaScript file that lives in your project root. It's called tailwind.js. And it generates a file with a bunch of defaults. And it just literally says like, okay, here are my colors. Here are my screen sizes. Here are my font styles. Here are my text sizes, right? So on and so forth. Thicknesses, sizes, widths, heights, padding, margin, right? All these different things. And they're just totally arbitrary. And what you do is there are reasonable defaults, but you can just literally define whatever type of thing you want. So for example, if I need a height that's 50 pixels, I just make one that's called 50 pixels. And then everything that could possibly have a height on it will also have this new 50 pixels variant. So it kind of generates every permutation that you could need.
Oh yeah.
For responsiveness, for, you know, hover and focus modifiers, right?
Yeah.
It generates all those stuff as like, it generates hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of classes basically. So it just takes this JavaScript file, config file, and then just generates a ton of classes and you can just use them.
Yeah, yeah. That reminds me a little bit of Tachyons. I mean, obviously I've talked about CSS or class-based CSS or utility classes, or there's so many names for them. You know, Paul and I have been talking about those for a long time.
Okay.
And I actually haven't gotten a chance to use Tailwind yet. It seems interesting. But yeah, it reminds me a lot of Tachyons, because Tachyons has a similar kind of build system, and it just kind of builds it out like you're saying, how you can configure like the colors and sizes and stuff, and it just generates a bunch of classes for you to use. Tailwind also looks interesting. So I also noticed that you were saying something in the general channel or in our Discord about or maybe it was Mikhail saying something about it, about something along the lines of assigns. I can't remember exactly. I have to go back and look.
I'm not sure. You mean the apply?
Apply. That's it. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. So apply is cool because you can kind of make it's a, I don't know very much about post CSS yet, but I switched to it because this kind of requires it. And it's a directive that you can put in your CSS files that you can basically make meta classes. He calls them components, CSS components. Mm-hmm. But basically, you just define a class and you say apply and then list a whole bunch of other classes, and it just kind of aggregates them all without having to redefine them.
Interesting. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So if you find yourself, for example, the most common example is a button, right? There's no button class that comes with Tailwind. So you just make, you know, define button. And you say, okay, I want rounded, I want background blue, I want white text.
Oh, okay.
That's all it is. So you just have to repeat that stuff over and over.
So it's like a mix-in kind of for SAS or stylus or whatever. That seems pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the docs for Tailwind always, like, again, I've kind of breezed through them. I haven't used it, but it looks like a very nicely put together system.
Yeah, it's very, I'm enjoying it so far. And I like not falling into the trap of make everything look like Bootstrap wants you to make it look. You know, I'm really not great at design, especially when the tools that I'm given already have kind of opinionated design. I really don't want to deviate too far from that. But this is flexible enough where I can define my own things if I need to and kind of make things on the fly. Like, I'm comfortable enough with CSS, but this is another abstraction kind of above that where, like, okay, I know where things should be. I know what they should look like. But I don't want to, you know, have to define the same thing 15 times over. So
right. So I'm curious. Is this the first? Well, besides Bootstrap, because you said you used Bootstrap, and Bootstrap has kind of gone the way of adding more and more utility classes into the system. Is this the first time that you've used kind of a purely utility class based setup?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, before Bootstrap, what was I using? Before I was using what was it? I was using a grid thing before, which came with some like style clearing, but that was it. I think it was like 960. It was one of those grid systems.
Yeah, 960.js
comes with everything. In fact, I don't even need grid systems anymore. I just use Flexbox for everything, and it's way more flexible, for lack of a better word.
Sure.
I really, really, really love Flexbox. I've got it kind of, I don't always quite understand what I'm doing, but if I can find examples of what I'm trying to do, I can usually make it work.
Yeah, it seems like I've been using Flex. I use Flexbox all the time, but it seems like CSS Grid is the next up and coming thing that's supposed to be like the UI programmer's dream.
What is? Oh, I haven't even heard about that.
Oh man, yeah. So again, I haven't used it, and I've just glossed over it. But so Flexbox can get kind of finicky in how you use it, I guess. And some people were saying how they have trouble with some of the terminology for Flexbox, like it's not necessarily intuitive, but CSS Grid, I'm not sure how supported it is, but it's been around for a little bit now. But basically, it's specifically tailored for building complex grid systems. So You know, like all those Swiss designed, I don't know, sites, I guess, posters, whatever, like the really abstract designed sites that we used to see that were people you had to use like tons of JavaScript to lay out.
Okay, yeah.
Well, apparently, so people are rebuilding this stuff with pure CSS and CSS Grid and making them like pretty robust in that they're responsive and the code isn't like crazy. And like I said, it doesn't require much of JavaScript to do it.
Interesting. Interesting. I'll have to look into that.
Yeah, but how are you finding utility classes? I know that with Nuxt you're getting view single file components, so you could just chuck scope styles into the components themselves if you wanted to, but how are you finding working with utility classes versus Bootstrap?
Yeah, you know, it makes the view components kind of messy from time to time. You kind of lose track of like what's a style that, you know, it just makes your components kind of noisy.
Mm-hmm.
But man, it's fast. Like, you don't have to jump around to another file, right?
Yep.
I was able to get things working that I've never been able to figure out before. So basically the way the console is laid out now is, I, for lack of a better word, it's like Slack or Discord. There's a nav bar on the left with a scrollable list. And then on the right side, there's like a header and a footer. And then the main view in the middle is also scrollable. And everything's docked right. And it's reactive, which... The current site is reactive, but it was never designed like reactive first.
Sure.
You know, it was always designed for the desktop, and we eventually had an iOS app, and it's functional, but it's bad. So it's nice to be able to spend some time on that and get it right now. And I'm not trying to move things around at all. Like I'm resisting the front end redesign. I'm just keeping everything exactly kind of where it is and where people expect to find it. It makes it easier for me. It's one less thing I have to worry about, right?
Yeah.
But I've just had a lot of success with it. I've been able to figure things out that, again, I normally haven't been able to do. I've got these little, like normally, so before I had a map view and then above it, I would list it was in a Bootstrap panel, and the Bootstrap panel has a header, a footer, and a thing in the middle, you know, content area. And so in my old view, I had the header was an antenna name and a couple of ancillary information on the right-hand side floating. And then the middle was the map view and the bottom were some buttons and text boxes, right? And I'm just like, okay, that's fine. But now I'm like, okay, why don't I make the entire panel just the map? Like the map is what people want to look at. It looks cool. And then what I do is I relatively positioned all the information on top of it. And I can do that using all it just... pure utility classes that are in Tailwind. So now I've got the antenna name floating on top. I've got this other information, and it looks way better.
Yeah.
Those kind of opportunities I'm trying to take advantage of and just add a little flair without total redesign, you know?
Yeah, that's what I think I like the most about utility classes. Like you said, it's very fast, so you can move very quickly. You don't have to jump across through files. You don't have to worry about, you know, if I swap out these classes here, it literally can't break anything else anywhere in your app. So what you're working on is what you're working on, so to speak. Because, you know, like way back when I was working on sites or learning CSS, I would make a change to a page and then Q&A tester would come back, oh, this page over here broke. And you're like, what? That's just not a thing. It's not a problem that you have unless you're messing with the classes that are generated, right? And I don't know. I can see how people don't like using multiple classes in your DOM because, you know, the messy argument comes into play. Like, well, how am I supposed to reason about this? And I guess an answer for that is Tailwind's apply. Like you said, oh, just make a class that makes more sense with apply because you're still using utility classes and you're still not, it's not like you're adding new variations of a rule, right? That's the whole idea of utility classes is a class is a class. It is what it is, like it is what it says on the tin, right? You don't have to worry about like a margin adding padding or something like that.
Another cool thing that because of the way Vue works with class sort of inheritance, where you can, if you have a component and you use that component somewhere, you can actually add the class attribute to the parent basically, and that class will kind of get merged in with the root element on the component itself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So if you've got a root div on your component that maybe has no classes at all, and then later whenever you implement it, and I do this a lot. So for example, my antenna panel, right? I'm going back to this map view. It's just a plain div, and in it's got, you know, all this relative positioning and stuff, but it's at the root level, it's just a div. And then in the level above it, in the site view, I just say class flex one, and it's nested within a thing. So I can, the antenna panel doesn't even know about where it's positioned, how big it should be, right? can define all that in this sort of higher level layout component where the layout matters. So I know where to find that stuff.
Yeah, that's a pattern that I've noticed I've been doing for a while too, is with your individual components, they might have some styling, they might have some positioning for the things inside, but in terms of the overall layout, they have no idea where they are, how wide they are, how tall they are, etc. That's all done on either when I call the component, you can, or when I use the component, you can slap a class on it, and a view will just merge those classes that you use on the component into the root div or the root DOM node on the inside of that component. So typically, all of the positioning is happening in whatever container that that component lives in, and not inside the component itself.
Yep, you did a better job explaining that than I did.
No, but it's like a pattern that works. I don't think I've ever explained it to anybody, but I'm glad you said that because that's something I've been doing for a while. And it's never something I thought like, oh, this is why I do this. It just is something one day I've had a thought like, oh, this is probably more flexible than the alternative. So I've been doing it that way ever since.
Yeah, so I'm really, really having a lot of fun with this. It's already better. And I made a lot of progress and I still have a lot of questions and we'll definitely follow up with that next time as I tackle some of these other challenges related to just maintaining state and everything. So
yeah, I'm interested to hear where you land on the getters and the dynamically registered modules because I haven't used those. I'm interested just because I'm interested. I don't have to do like Paul's kind of taken over all the JavaScript code. And I'm living in Elixir land the past month about, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. But that doesn't mean that now you got my brain churning because I have done a lot of Nuxt. And I'm also, I haven't really asked you about like what you think about plugins and modules and managing meta classes and stuff and all that in Nuxt. So I might have to ask you that next time.
Okay. Yeah, I'm slowly adding those things as I need them. And trying to figure it out.
Yeah, you can do some pretty wild stuff with them. I mean, we have two different apps coming from one code base out of Nuxt for the custom domains and for the full DK app. So most of that's handled through plugins and modules that we wrote for Nuxt.
That's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
I do have one issue, which I don't think it's a showstopper, and it has to do with the initial page load. So when the page first loads, it connects to WebSocket and authenticates. And then because of the way that the old system used to work, you get a gigantic number of messages back to you, right? For each station, you might get, oh, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 messages. Mm-hmm. So multiply that by 25, you know, it adds up. And a lot of those messages have to do with, you know, cause a module to be registered or cause, you know, UI updates, right? They're updating state. You're just loading basically the whole initial state of the application.
Right.
And that's really, really slow. It takes a long time. I mean, it does take a long time for the messages to come in, but it takes a long time for Vuex to churn through them all because each message is an action. And then each action emits or commits a mutation to the store or does a registration, right? So... Mm. And while it's doing that, it's just sitting there burning through CPU and not updating the UI at all. So I got to figure out if there's some way to do it, if I can like batch it or maybe like give it like breaks in between and force it to update. So at least the UI is responsive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what the holdup is. And it's not the Vuex developer tools because I completely disabled them and tried that and it was still slow.
Yeah.
I tried running in production mode, you know, it's still slow. So there's something fundamentally wrong with the way I'm doing it. And I don't know, I got to find some way around it.
Yeah, maybe we can do a pair session sometime this week and see if we can figure it out.
That would be really good.
And we'll have to share the results of that next week. We gotta throw a hook out there. We got to get people coming back. They got to come back for the answers and the hot tips that sometimes we have.
I might not even come back next week.
Might not. I'll have to find another co-host. You guys, they'll see the tweet. If we need another co-host, they'll see the tweet. But yeah, as always, you know, we welcome feedback, we welcome questions, we welcome criticism. You know, I don't have it all figured out. I'm not a guru programmer, so I welcome corrections and errata and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. I'm Shrockwell on Twitter, and Sean is Sean Washbot, all one word. Apparently, he's a robot Only on the internet, though. I've never met him in person, so he might actually be a robot.
I started the trend there, Sean Washbot. Now, Sean Wash has been idle since like 8 years or something like that, and I can't get it. So it's Sean Washbot on Twitter. If you're looking for a job, Specs got you covered. They got a job board hanging out at spec.fm/jobs. So go check that out if you're looking for some new employment. If you feel so inclined, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts on iTunes, because that helps us out a lot. It's just business stuff. You know, the more reviews, the more listeners we have coming in. So that's helpful for us, and we appreciate it.
Yep. We're also hanging out in the spectrum.chat channel for the podcast. And there's Elixir channel and Vue channels in there as well, if you're looking for any questions or just want to talk about the episodes. And the show notes are going to be available at dnc.show, as always. So thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next week.
See ya. Thanks again to DigitalOcean for sponsoring today's episode. DigitalOcean really is the easiest cloud platform to run and scale your applications. Visit do.co/doesnot to sign up and receive a free $100 credit towards your next application. Again, that's a free $100 credit towards DigitalOcean's effortless administration tools, robust compute, storage, and networking services, one-click app installs, and even monitoring and alerting services so that you can sleep well knowing that your application is running A-OK.